Remember when I was young, so were you. Time stood still, and love was all we knew. You were the first, so was I. We made love and then you cried. Remember when? Remember when we vowed the vows and walked the walk, and gave our hearts, made the start, and it was hard. We lived and learned life through curves. There was joy, there was hurt. Remember when? Remember when old ones died and new were born, and life was changed, disassembled, rearranged. We came together, fell apart, and broke each other's hearts. Remember when?
Kind of a slow piece of music to open with tonight. This has been an interesting day. After last night's program, I received one text, and it exploded this morning, and I spent a good portion of the day working with clients, wrapping up and collecting some silver for them, and just doing a lot of stuff like that. It's been a very, very busy day. I actually got an email today, which has nothing to do with the program, from a guy that I've not heard from since 2012, wondering if I was still in the business and dealing with precious metals, et cetera, et cetera. And he's got a cousin or a brother who wants to talk with me. But for those of you who responded, everything is locked in. Everything is set. Make sure you check your emails for the orders, and we kind of go on from there. Crazy stuff. Absolutely crazy stuff today. I had spent a good portion of the last couple of hours cleaning some things up. For those of you who tuned into John's program, I'm glad you did. John and I had a long talk about it this morning. And as he's now well aware of, this is the very kind of thing I've been talking to you people about for a long, long time. The lies, the deceit that's coming out of not only all aspects of our political world, but certainly so many aspects of our health world, Dr. Fauci and all the rest of this nonsense that we're facing, the lies, the deceit, it goes on and on and on. And John had talked to me about either trying to tune into the program, which I've not had a chance to do. However, I will be going to the website and clicking on that rather lengthy video tonight, and I will actually be publishing it on Federal Observer as well. Not that I'm trying to take anyone away from RBN. It is a powerful, powerful piece. I spoke very briefly last night about a nearly hour and a half video that we had published. I believe it was, I can't even remember what website right now. Time allowing, I'll try to locate it for you, and we'll try to run it. But over the last couple hours, I've been working on a number of things because I had a particular direction I wanted to take this program tonight. And even to the point of trying to find some pieces of music to open with, and I sent two different pieces over to Michael tonight, and I'm not sure which piece that I said, here, let's run this to open with. And then I said, no, scratch that, run this one. I don't know which one we ran, but 10 minutes ago, I made a decision to take this program into a totally unrelated direction. And Part of it is because there's a lot going on in my brain, what's left of it, as relates to an upcoming trip that has been tentatively scheduled. And what are you beeping? Did I shut myself off? Okay, I got to watch for that. It's okay, man. Don't worry about it. We'll potentially run Johnny Cash at the bottom of the hour. We'll hang on to it another time. It's a good, good piece. But I also think that once I get rolling with the direction I'm going to take it, we've got some other music we may run. You know, a little bit of Inagata Da Vida, some other good stuff from that that era back so many years ago. It's unreal. I am scheduled to go on a trip in September or early October for a week, maybe as much as 10 days. All things being equal, it will be my intent to broadcast while we're gone. But I sometimes also can't guarantee all of that. But having said all that, I made a decision within minutes of going on the air to take this program in a whole different direction. A lot of you folks don't know me. It's okay. It doesn't bother me. Part of this comes around because of several conversations that I've had this morning, one with a new client, a listener here at RBN, who happened to catch me, waking me up, and I couldn't function yet. I told him I'd give him a call back. He said he's going to be out for 45 minutes. I had to run, pick up a car, blah, 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 blah. And we did talk later. But we spent very little time talking about the reason he called, although we dealt with that. We really began to introduce ourselves to each other. We talked about the education system. We talked about, and he's about 10 years younger than I am. Maybe 7 years, whatever. But it was quite a profound conversation. We covered such a wide range of things. Now, many of you know that my wife and I have had our two eldest grandchildren living with us each for over half their lives. One is now in her junior year at the university across the valley. The other has started her junior year of high school. But she is a smart kid, but she's a very combative child in so many respects. And she's not the kind that really does well with going to school online. She needs the interaction of teachers, eye to eye, face to face. And I received a notice from this amazing gal that we're working with at the high school, who has been my granddaughter's champion. I am the contact, and yet I seem to be the contact only for her. I don't hear from my grandchild's actual counselor. I don't necessarily hear from her teachers. Excuse me, friends, they are jerks. And I finally got to the point when I got an email from this gal this afternoon, Chelsea, that Katie is having problems in two of her classes. And I began to send her an email, decided to back off. And then I went out, took care of some other business, had to go to the bank, get some checks, take care of some things. And I went to get something to eat. And then I sat down, and it all began to bubble up. In a short while, I'm going to share with you that comment, not because it matters, but because it becomes somewhat of a follow-up to what I'm about to share with you. Dated February 15th, 1968. This is my story. Being the chef, the bartender, and janitor at the post, at the off-post officer at NCO Club near North Point, Germany, home of the 619th Ordnance Unit, I was cleaning the club up after the monthly Combined Wives Club luncheon when Holroyd informed me that I had a call from division headquarters which I needed to take. It was Frank, our former company clerk, telling me that my tour of duty was nearly at an end and asked how many days leave I wanted to take in the States. I told him I had no desire to return home. What's up? The answer was the one which most of us dreaded at the time. You see, Tet had just taken its toll that month in Nam, and I was being called up. Oh, I thought to myself, but what the hell? I was ready for a new adventure anyway. After all, it was easy in the movies. I mean, wasn't it? You know, John Wayne and all. I told Frank I would take 45 days and began to make my preparations. I landed in Philly and called my mother and stepfather, Frank, and asked them to pick me up at the airport. And Frank said, in Philly? I said, hell no, I responded. I'll be at O'Hare in about 3 hours. So he and Mom brought my brothers, Mark and Cliff, the best welcome home I could have had. They were in their Dr. Dentons and all. So here I was, recently turned 20, more excited to see my two brothers, 15 and 16 years younger than I, than just about anyone else. And they just stood in the back seat of that damn Plymouth wagon with these big, wide, poop-eaten grins on their faces. All was well in the world. By the next day, I was itching to see Jane and Carol and that juicy farm girl just over the border in Wisconsin, but the family had to come first. My rather youthful libido would just have to wait a day or so. Great-grandmothers Maud and Gretchen would have to come first, along with my maternal grandmother, Nana. The cousins and my aunt and uncles would have to wait, but the dreaded meeting with my grandfather could not be put off. Well, I called Jane as soon as I was able. She invited me over to a party at her folks' house and said that a few of the folks that I knew would be there. I went. It was good to see them, but the feelings against the war were already beginning to heat up, and some looked at me as a FBKFA, that's a future baby killer from America. You see, I was beginning to learn that you can't go home again, that Jane was still one of the most beautiful girls I'd ever had the pleasure of calling a friend, both inside and out. I still have the photograph I took of her in 65 that became her likeness in the Glenbrook North High School yearbook. Some years later, I asked my cousin Peg what had ever become of Jane. Well, she'd married well, spent many years living in France, but now she's living back in the family home of her parents, where I had gone to see them, and I knew her parents well, in Northbrook, Illinois. Well, other than Jane and a few others, I've never really had any curiosity as to what has happened to the others I'd grown up with, although many years later I found Bill Warehane through Sit on My Facebook. We exchanged pleasantries and some history, and we quietly went back to our lives. I mean, my God, a football jock became a revered teacher? We come across each other once in a while and exchange pleasantries. Well, so then I decided to give Carol a call, you know, nice little Italiana that she was. Carol and I had gone to the prom together, was quite close with her parents and grandparents, Ted and Carol, for whom she'd been named. I'd been the filmographer at their 50th wedding anniversary. Carol and I spent the next few weeks rekindling our relationship, including my making a trip to Michigan State where she was going to school. But as I was headed out of Chicago to go see her, Riots were taking place in every major city in America, as it was the day following the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. You see, the natives were restless, and if you were white, your car was a target, moving or not. Oh, baby, the bricks and stones were flying off the bridges going through the city, but my car escaped unscathed that day. I made it to Michigan, where, while enjoying a steamy evening in my car with Carol, LBJ announced that I shall not seek and will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president. Man, the hooting and the hollering on that campus was loud that night, but it was time to return to Chicago and move on. After all, I had a date with Ho Chi Minh and I couldn't keep him waiting. But beforehand, a rendezvous with my father, who I had not seen in 13 years. And then a visit to the city of flowers in their hair, San Francisco, to see my Aunt Muffin, her husband, and the kid, along with Pat Paulson, the kid's godfather. My strongest memory of that trip to Frisco is my uncle telling me to stick a piece of Ivory soap up my butt so that I'd get a fever. and to make sure that I did it every morning so the doctors would give me a deferment from going to Nam. Well, apparently the cause of that kind of fever could not be detected, and they would have to let you off the hook. Then I passed and got on a flight to Fort Lewis, where a red-headed nurse was awaiting my arrival, unbeknownst to her nor myself. Standing in line for my physical before embarking on my whirlwind tour of the jungle, I passed out. Was it fear? I was too dumb and young to know what fear was. They picked me up off the ground, decided I needed to go to the hospital. Bang! Mononucleosis and hepatitis. You see, my friends, in Germany, each night when I pulled up to a string of bars at 10:30, from where I would party and drink and other things till 4 in the morning, I wasn't eating enough. I survived on liquid nutrition. I mean, after all, each bottle contained natural ingredients such as, what, barley, hops? Das Fast. Der gut deutsche Scheiße. I mean, what the hell could go wrong? They checked me into the hospital at Fort Lewis for a 2-week stay, after which the doctor suggested an additional 2-week rest and relaxation, that's R&R, trip to a warm and dry climate. So I went back to Phoenix to my dad's place. After all, we were still getting to know each other, but back to the redhead. Well, maybe we shouldn't. After all, this is a family story. Well, to make this a long story short, although this is very therapeutically rewarding, my planned trip to Nam in Cameron Bay was delayed from its original arrival of April until June the 5th of 68, the day after the assassination of Bobby Kennedy in Los Angeles. It was not until shortly after leaving the tarmac in Washington State that I sent a note to the pilot asking the condition of Kennedy, only at that point learning that he had died. Damn. Were the deaths of King and Kennedy an omen of my future in country? Only time would tell. My position had already been filled in the Bay Area, so I was reassigned to On K. I was flown up there only to learn that the company I was supposed to join had, for the most part, been wiped out in a firefight the day before, and they had no need for my services as a spoon. Hung around for several days waiting for reassignment, which finally arrived. June 6th, 1968. Come on, the Huey boy. You going to Queen Yan, where you going to learn your fate. The fate came in the guise of one warrant officer, Christopher Lucci. What I've just shared with you was written by me in March of 2014. But that wasn't the end of the story. As a matter of fact, what I've just shared with you, I actually wrote in a hotel room in Newport Beach, California. I was on one of those trips with two of my comrades from that trip to Vietnam, Leonard and Raymond. Raymond, sometimes better known as Brother Smooth, a typical New Yorker who's become an exceedingly unpleasant individual to even be around any longer. Interesting stuff. But they wanted to go out, and they wanted to do this and that, and go. Raymond wanted to go shopping, and Leonard wanted to go find a place to go gambling out at the reservation somewhere. I said, I'll tell you guys what. You guys go on. I'm just going to sit back here and enjoy the peace and the quiet. Now, there is a bar in this hotel that at one time in his life, when John Wayne and his family lived in the Newport area, that he used to frequent. And it was all a part of what this place, which now is a resort, was. And the bar was named for him and had marvelous pictures and stuff of him all over the place. Not just movie posters and junk, but actual pictures of him that were taken in this place. Kind of interesting. Well, to kind of pick up where we left off, the purpose for that writing was a discussion that the three of us had had for a while, is that we should all put our talents together and write a book about our life, our experiences in Vietnam. And so what I shared was the preface to my portion of the book. In other words, what was I doing in the military leading up to that point? Now, let's take a couple of minutes And I want to share with you the conversation that I had, or the text that I sent Chelsea this afternoon. This is my granddaughter's. She's not her real counselor, but she is the best thing that has ever happened to the kid in this school. And I told you, she sent a letter this morning, sent me an email this morning because Kylie was doing very poorly in two of the classes. And so here's my note at 2:19 this afternoon. I received your email this morning. I know that she had a lesson issue last week in photography. It emailed the teacher and claims the teacher did not respond. Personally, I'm beginning to revert to my original belief that she is either BSing me or this tech stuff is causing major issues with her. As relates to the forensic, that's another one of her classes, I cannot respond as these teachers will not respond to me, period. What good does any of this do anyway? I'm not angry with you, Chels. I'm fed up with individuals and a system that has chosen to no longer function as it should. The last three generations have been let down more and more. Today we have basement-dwelling, spoiled brats who will not stand up and do what they need to do to succeed in life. But why should they? Their parents expected the schools to be their babysitters. And I saw this beginning in 1965 and dropped out of high school in the third week of my senior year. Sorry to ramble, but I'm angry today. Chelsea's response to me was, I can tell. I'm sorry, it's been a rough day. And again, I apologize for the lack of communication with other teachers. Please compile a list of questions or concerns. I can reach out to teachers and follow up as needed. I'm on Kylie's team, and between the two of us, I think that's a pretty good team. Don't let it get you down. My response to her was this. You have never let us down. As far as I'm concerned, you are that school. And I thank you. She's not responded to that because I think it shocked the hell out of her. But you see, that's the reality. I could take my own military experience and certainly go back a little earlier. Because you see, for me, that's what happened. I look at the teachers I had in my early years, and it was a whole different way that I was being taught and that the other students and kids that I went to school with were being taught. I have, little by little, as time goes by, Philip Meyer and I become very, very good friends on Facebook. Philip Meyer's family owned a gas station and repair shop literally right around the corner from our house and in Northbrook, Illinois. And unbeknownst to me, I wasn't aware of the fact that Philip and I had been in the same Cub Scout pack together one time. And some months ago, he asked for my address. He had something to send me. Well, Philip and I were never that close. I mean, I remember his father. I don't remember Phil. And I get this package. It's got my old Cub Scout banner in it with my name that had been printed on it with some kind of a piece of paint. You know, we didn't have black markers like that back in those days. And Dick Bain. Dick and I had a strange situation. Dick was a thief. Dick stole jewelry from my mother. He stole stuff from my mother's, one of her best friends down the street. I got to go pee. Can we go to your mother's friend's house so I can use her bathroom? And he's stealing stuff out of her bathroom. And apparently he lives like 5 minutes away from me here. But that doesn't matter. We all went through amazing experiences. And I look at teachers that I had, first grade, Mrs. King, who we wound up, before I went in the military and left away, we lived two houses away from her, remained very, very close friends. And she stayed in touch with me when I was in the service, sent me letters. I can't remember the name of the teacher in the second grade. I know she was ugly. My third grade, Mrs. Otis, she was hot, amazingly gorgeous. I knew this in the third grade, man. Fourth grade, Miss Durkiny and Miss Cameron, a couple of lesbian friends, but good teachers and et cetera, had them again in sixth grade. Fifth grade was my biggest plus, Donald Adair. And I've talked about him before. We've got an entire site. The entire Metropolis.cafe website is dedicated to his memory. And what he taught me did not ever stop searching for truth. This is a school that had been built in the 1920s, people. It had no air conditioning in it. You'd open the windows when it got hot. That was it. An amazing human being. I know the names of many of my teachers. But as time went on, I began to see things that were changing. Things that I knew something wasn't right. And by the third week of my senior year in high school, I said, that's it. I walked out. Education was becoming less and less of an effect any longer. It was becoming more and more sports. You know, who's on the football team, the basketball team, the track and field, blah, 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 blah. Who's the homecoming king and queen? All that stuff is a part of our lives. I understand that. But I just saw people paying less and less attention to the real education thing. And yet that wasn't bad compared to what it started to become in the later 60s. The Vietnam War. The fights against it. What was going on in the streets. Parents just letting their kids get away with bloody murder, do what they damn well please. Yeah. I do not regret one day, not a single day that I spent in the military. 4.5 years. I do not regret one single day that I spent the 21 months I was in Vietnam. It was, in many respects, the best of times. You had a job to do. I didn't have a girlfriend at home or a wife at home to worry about, so I wasn't worrying about, you know, who she was shagging. None of that kind of nonsense. I had a job to do. I concentrated on that job. I came out not wounded, didn't get shot, got shot down. I was in a helicopter once. We got shot down. No. We got shot. We could have gone down. I happened to be sitting that day on some kind of a solid iron something or other. It's a good thing I was, because I had a second rear end, as it were. And so I'm going to go to break in a couple of minutes. When we come back, I want to kind of pick up on this story just a little bit. It goes back. The first one, by the way, was entitled In the Garden of Eden. Our first one that I just share with you. It's published on our website, Federal Observer. It was called Preface, In the Garden of Eden. And I've shared this story with you before. Why did you choose that name? And maybe this is why I referenced that song for you, Michael. One of the most prolific songs that I ever heard in my life, In a Gata De Vida. And when I heard that, I said, these guys are stoned, man. I know exactly what they're saying. They're singing In the Garden of Eden. Everybody in Nam looked at me like, are you out of your freaking mind? That's not what they're singing, blah, 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 blah. 40 years later, one of the members of that band admitted that that's exactly what had been written, and they were practicing it in a half-assed studio in one of their homes or whatever. And as they're singing it, that's how it came out of their mouths. In a Gata De Vida. They were stoned out of their mind when they did that. That full length, that full 17-minute piece of music is exactly what they were trying to do. Recorded, never re-recorded. We'll be back. All the people slipping through the cracks. Well, you can run and hide, but you just can't change the facts.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
The Republic Broadcasting Network, late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore, is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the red pill.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an energy cleaner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an energy cleaner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
You know that I'm loving you. In a god of a vita, baby, don't you know that I'll always be true. Oh, won't you come with me and take my hand. Oh, won't you come with me and walk this land.
Oh, you knew we had to pull this out, right? The kicker is, I know, within my heart, my soul, within my everything, that there are some of you who are my brothers, who also served. I also know that there may well, in fact, be some of those of you who were my sisters, who also served. One of these days, I'm going to sit down and write the story of an amazing relationship I had with a nurse. Not the kind of relationship that you might suspect. It was spooky. I might have to get drunk or stoned to try to be able to put it all together. Oh, yeah. June 6th, 1968. And so my journey with the 498th Dustoff Company began. Within days, I volunteered along with a guy named Dave Banks as a crew member of one of the most elite medevac units in country. Reading books years later, I was surprised at the reverence paid by other groups of our type of group. And for those of you who may not be familiar with what dustoff is, a little bit different than medevac. Medevac typically were air ambulance. They were helicopters that would go out and pick up essentially wounded U.S. GIs and allies, maybe Koreans, Australians, those that were there. Dustoff had more of a, I guess to some degree, a Christian mentality that they would pick up wounded human beings. They could have been our allies on the Vietnamese side of things, South Vietnamese people. They could have been captured enemy combatants. Oh, we did some of those too. I've shared those stories with you in the past. Well, Bennett, what do you mean you volunteered? What the hell for, Bennett? Don't you know you were putting your life in the line of fire? Yeah, I guess I was a little naive to have given that a second thought, but I recall that while stationed in Germany, I had an opportunity to participate in a one-day mission in a helicopter for flight pay, and I fell in love with that form of flying. Of course, the circumstances were a little bit different, or so I was to discover. Dustoff units, as I mentioned, were a bit unlike traditional medevac or ME units. MEs typically would retrieve American military and support members, including allies who had been wounded in action. We'd transport them to medical aid stations or hospitals. But dustoff units, as I just mentioned, would pick up any wounded individual, enemy combatants, captured, to render the same services. And under the guidance of one Colonel Robert Scott, we did our duty. We did it quite proudly. Among the first people I met upon landing at Lane was a guy who claimed he was from Chicago. And so because I was from that area, he figured we had much in common. We'd be good friends. Well, we got along for a while. But eventually we were at each other's throats because, frankly, Keyser was the kind of imbecile who could get people killed. Actually, Roy Keyser was from Peoria, and that ain't Chicago. Nope, Brother Banks was the guy I would tie to. And yeah, after all these years, I wish I knew where he was today. Dave Banks was a black man. You see, one of the things you found is that you drew to people of similar and like minds. We all had a certain degree of commonality in our like minds, and that was to survive and to get home. And all these years later, 50-some-odd years later, faces flash before me to this day, but names escape me. There's a few, Frenchie Lemieux, Tom Furnow, Dunlap, and the brothers down by the fire bell, you understand. Dumont and the other boys from Pennsylvania, and that ignorant blackland farm boy from Missouri who'd been raised to believe that colored folk went blind when the sun went down. Yeah, these are a few who come to mind at this hour. Maybe it's time to pull out the slideshow once more. Oh, I could tell you some stories about each one of them folks. Yeah, that boy from the South, we were on the anniversary of Tet. We were in 69. We were all sitting down there in little areas around our own, and our base was almost exclusively flight. We had a number of different helicopter companies that were attacks. They were people like ourselves, etc. It was quite unreal. And this dumb, stupid, I mean, hick from Missouri, this guy's about as dumb as they could be. And we're sitting there inside this bunker, and one of the brothers, one of the black guys, And it's pitch dark outside. We're waiting for the enemy to come through the community across outside our post and attack. And we're all waiting. Come on, Mother Jones. And this black guy reaches out on the sandbag and bam, smashes something. Somebody said, what the hell was that? He says, I just killed me a cockroach or a spider, whatever it was. And this dumb hick says, y'all mean you colored folks can see in the dark? Well, my daddy told me y'all went blind when the sun went down. Oh, my God. How ignoramus. Oh, yeah, I nearly forgot. Two of the main reasons for this post were Raymond Shack, who was not only the best man at my wedding some 50 years ago now. He's been my accountant and legal counsel for about four decades. Of course, then it was our bartender, you know, the Iceman, Leonard Kazarian. I spoke with Leonard yesterday, by the way, who found us quite by accident some almost 15 years ago. Because of a piece I had written correcting major errors regarding the death of one of our pilots. The gentleman who I mentioned during the first half of the program today, Christopher Lucci. But that's a story for another chapter, another day. Well, Raymond and I have gotten together nearly every year since 1970. Leonard began to join us some years ago, although I was forced to pass on the reunion in 2017 for a week or so. And why do we get together? Not much remembering our experiences in country, but to celebrate our lives. Eat well, just kick back, and sometimes soak up the sun and watch the laps of the water on the shoreline of the Pacific Ocean, knowing that so many miles across that ocean is where our journey began. In the back of my mind is always Lucci and that damn piece of chicken. I guess that in many respects we've been among the lucky ones. Or were we? Late during the week of September of 2017, two pieces of information came across my desk. One had to do with a critique of the PBS Ken Burns documentary, The Vietnam War, which had been written by, the critique had been written by one Terry Garlock. It was an 18-hour series. I'm sure it was watched by many and purportedly included interviews with many of our brothers who served in that action as well. But it also was also subsequently panned by a good number of other veterans who claim that the series served an entirely different agenda, not truly through the eyes of those of us who lived it. But the second item which crossed my desk was something fleeting, something that just flashed before my eyes, something that I was meant to see. Another documentary. I've watched the original film of the broadcast by CBS News' Morton Dean in January of 1971, 1 year after I left. I subsequently went to YouTube to watch a badly worn-out version of that original film. Apparently, someone at PBS felt the need to air that one-hour documentary during the same month as that of the Burns series. I extended my thanks to whoever they happened to be, because what I saw when I watched this elicited many emotions from deep within me. I smiled and I cried. Needless to say that in my original writing on this piece I'm sharing with you, that film was our story. Not just mine and Raymond's and Leonard's, but a warm, tense, and sometimes loving story of all of us who shared a bond, which no one who had not been there could ever understand. Yeah, it was our story. The story of a Vietnam veteran. The story of those who served in Dust-Off. Unfortunately, I at one point in time had to come back and post a note. The Morton Dean documentary has now been blocked in the United States. And I had to go in and post a replacement video in February of this year. But I extend this out. I welcome home to all my brothers and sisters who served. Oh, my friends, there were a lot more women over there than you could believe. Most of them served as doctors, as nurses, good group of people. My original closing also extended my unbelievable warmth and thanks to Morton Dean, Greg Cook. Greg Cook was Dean's original cameraman in Vietnam. In many respects, they became one of us. I thank them for remembering. Who am I? American medevac. Dust off. Why do I take the time to share all of this with you? I don't know. Leonard and I talked at length yesterday. We're laying the groundwork for our annual get-together, but we've got an interesting problem going on this year. One of the members of our group, we don't really want to be a part of this trip. He's become an unbearable soul in his years. Horribly, horribly unbearable. Why do you say that? First of all, he's from New York. And the problem with New Yorkers is that they think it's the greatest place in the world. Yeah. Sorry, it isn't. Well, at least not anymore. I'm sick and tired of hearing about the Metropolitan Opera and the Statue of Liberty and all this stuff. And yet look at your politicians, Raymond. They've destroyed your city. They've destroyed your state. It's sickening to me. Raymond has become an increasingly difficult human being to be around. And every time we get together now for the last 5 or 6 years, he always causes massive fights and anger and hatred. And it's just, that's not why we get together. He won't shut up about New York sports. He won't shut up about New York politics and the Democrats are going to be the savior of this country. And, oh, that's right, Chuck Schumer. He's such a great human being. So we'll see what's going to happen. Last year was probably the worst, and I swore I'd never do it again. Raymond wants to get together one-on-one, but I'm not playing long-term games with him. And that's a terrible thing to have to say. But I guess we all grow older and things happen. I have a section of Federal Observer that I've not been paying as much attention to as I should. And it's called Nam. Some Came Home. All that I'm sharing with you in here thus far obviously came from that segment as well as my own Without Apology area. There's some marvelous stories in there. I will share with you for just a moment a small two-paragraph thing that I wrote for one of the pieces that I published. And it's quite an interesting story because it actually is about one of, and I published this in May of 2018, And interestingly enough, it was about our company. It was about Dustoff. It was about Lane Army Heliport, which is where I was stationed. I did not know this guy. I think he was out of there before I got there. But that was not the point. And as I stated in this piece entitled, This is One of Our Stories, I stated, while searching for specific information early in the week, I came across the following, and to say the least, it left me in shock for several reasons. The first of which, because Memorial Day at that time was upon us. Second week, because the following week, June 5th of 2018, I will look back exactly a half a century to my landing in Vietnam, where within a week I would be assigned to the 498th Medical Company, Dustoff, the company for which a part of the following story took place. And although I did not specifically remember David Hurdle, our stories overlapped during the same time frame, to the point where we both left the company and Vietnam within 2 weeks of one another. But I don't remember the guy. But there are others. Final note, the author made reference within the following about his story having taken place some 30 years before his writings, which meant that what I shared, what I published, was actually 20 years old. And of course, to all my brothers who served in the 498th out of Lane Army Heliport and all over Vietnam, our time and story is nearing its end. And when it comes to an end, I'll see y'all at sundown. The article that, as I say, I published this under the heading, "This is one of our stories." It can be read at Federal Observer. His original article was entitled, "Who Do You Have?" It's powerful. Unbelievable. And it is, if you spent any time at all in Nam, to read that story, to read any one of the other stories that we have published under this category called Nam, Some Came Home, you'll understand. But then maybe some of you are younger. Maybe you spent time defending poppy fields in Afghanistan or getting ill because of Agent Orange, or because of the crap that took place after we stuck our nose into Saddam Hussein's area after the attacks. Oh, my God. Iraq was attacked by the Kurds. Come on, get out of here. It goes beyond that. But these are the stories they don't tell. These are the stories that they don't want to tell. How about that country that Iraq attacked? Did you ever know why Iraq attacked that country? Because that country was drilling horizontally under border lines, stealing oil from Iraq. But you never heard that side of the story, did you? It's unbelievable. We never hear the full side of the story, my friends. And that is another reason to go back to the Republic Radio website tonight. It is important you do that. Go back to Republic Broadcasting Network tonight and watch the video that's been published there by John. It is way too important. Now you understand truth, reality, the lies, the deceit. It's what we're all living. And you know what? We lived it and we fought for it back then and there too. I hear the tunes. Another piece of music from that period of time. The Doors. This is the end. Lord willing, I'll see you tomorrow night. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end. No safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your again. Can you picture what will be so limitless and free, desperately in need of some stranger's hand in a desperate land? Thank you. lost in a romance, wilderness of pain, and all the children are insane. All the children are insane. Wait. Ride the king's highway, baby. Weird scenes inside the gold mine. Ride the highway west, baby. Ride the snake, ride the snake to the lake, the ancient lake, baby. The snake is long, 7 miles. Ride the snake. He's old and his skin is cold. The West is the best. The West is the best. Get here and we'll do the rest. The blue bus is calling us. The blue bus.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.